Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's December 14th, 2012. You're listening to the best poker show this holiday season. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm a very holly jolly Scott Long.
You like Christmas, don't you, buddy?
Actually, I shouldn't say I don't like Christmas. I just don't get as amped up for Christmas as most people do.
But you do a lot of stuff around the Christmas time.
Yeah, well, but most people do, except for Chris Hobbit Cosenza. But
I will be seeing The Hobbit this weekend. Thank you very much. See myself on screen.
But the one thing I do like is I do like the Christmas songs. You know, I like getting into the spirit, even though I don't really do the whole Black Friday, buy a bunch of crap that no one wants stuff. And you know, put strings of popcorn on the Christmas tree, all that kind of crap. But I do like listening to the Christmas songs, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, in this time of year, you can't go anywhere without hearing them. And some of the channels on the radio, and the radio for some of our younger listeners is this free music service that comes through your car speakers. So this time of the year, some of the stations actually switched on all Christmas format, right?
Man.
So, you know, I was driving, doing some errands the other day, and I was listening to Christmas songs and getting into the mood. And then I came home, and I decided to do a little research, because that's what I do for the Ante Up Nation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised to find how many modern Christmas classic songs actually are about poker or inspired by poker.
Really?
Did you know this?
No, enlighten me, please.
Absolutely. Okay, so there's a whole bunch, but we only got a little bit of time on the show, so I only picked five, but it's amazing how many are, right?
Okay.
So the first one, I didn't know this, it's the most wonderful time of the year. Of course it is, right? You know, it's Christmas, right?
Yeah.
Andy Williams might like you to think that he courted this classic after enjoying some roasting marshmallows with friends at a Christmas party, wearing a sweater, you know, all that kind of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But no, he really started singing this after he attended the World Series of Poker. True story.
Okay, how do we know this?
All right, and I thought that was just kind of random, right? But
yeah.
So I kept digging, and then I found out, you know, the song Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow?
Uh-huh.
Of course, we all sang that in elementary school, right?
Yeah.
And you know, the lyrics of this Christmas classic conjure up thoughts of warmth and security. But did you know that it wasn't holiday happiness that Frank Sinatra was full of when he recorded this song? It was the warmth and security of holding an ace high flush the chairman of the board was crooning about in the song. You know, he's just ready for the chips to snow. Let us know if those chips snow.
So it's like an older version of Let It Rain, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Okay.
Yes, but it, you know, it's the holiday version of
okay.
You know, chips falling, right?
All right.
But related, and this is amazing how much of this stuff is related when you get to Christmas. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Yeah.
All right. You know, you might think that Perry Como recorded the song after walking down the snow-strewn streets of New York City, right?
Yeah.
Sounds that way, right?
Pretty much.
But no. Seriously, in reality, he got the inspiration for this song when he was holding the True Nuts on the river and Frank Sinatra three-bet him with an all-in with an ace-high flush. One poker game inspired two Christmas classics. Isn't that amazing?
Oh,
all right, so, you know, but those are like the old-time ones, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, there's some really new songs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And because of the poker boom and everything, I figured maybe some of those might be poker-inspired. And turns out I was right, as I often am.
Yeah, as you always are.
All right, so the All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Mm-hmm.
you know, Mariah Carey in that totally Sweet Santa outfit, right, dancing around?
Yeah.
The song sounds innocent enough, but did you know that she really recorded this after losing all of then-husband Tommy Mottola's money in a high-stakes Hollywood cash game with Tobey Maguire?
And she was consequently sued by Santa Claus, right, after that?
Well, yeah, maybe. But at that time, though, she couldn't afford to buy Tommy a Christmas gift, so to kind of mask that, she sang the song where all she wanted was just him.
It was her polite, gentle way of letting him know he was broke.
Women are evil this way. You know?
Evil.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, he was like, oh, this is a sweet song. He did have no idea that he was getting screwed out of a Christmas gift. And then finally, I had to go way back on this one. Way, way, way back.
Mm-hmm.
But have you ever heard the song, The 12 Days of Christmas?
I think so.
Yeah, probably 45 times today already, right?
Yeah, probably.
Well, this is a holiday folk song. And if you read the lyrics, it indicates a very generous person is heaping guests on his true love, right?
Yeah.
Turns out, Wikipedia. Turns out the real story is that this was penned in the 1700s by a poker player as he did whatever he could to build up his bankroll for his true love, which was the game of poker. After a government action on a dark Friday afternoon forced one of the earliest popular poker rooms, Fullest Tilteth, to go out of business, holding lots of players' money.
Fullest Tilteth.
It's amazing, you know, there's just these parallels, you know, stuff comes around, history repeats itself.
Wow.
You know what you get for Seven Lords of Leaping?
What?
You get a couple of $5 sit-and-goes. But, you know, there are plenty of other ones, but, you know, we don't have enough time on the show. But it's truly amazing how many of these songs really were inspired by poker.
Man, that was a Christmas miracle right there. We had nothing to talk about at the beginning of the show, and somehow Scott pulled out this incredible correlation between Christmas songs and poker.
Oh, true. Totally true. Totally true.
Yeah, you have any proof to back any of this up?
Absolutely, you'll be on the forum.
It'll be on the forum, okay, yeah.
The stuff that I just wrote there, so. You know, copy and paste it somewhere else, and then it becomes true.
Well, that was sheer brilliance, and yes, if it's on the internet, it must be true.
Absolutely.
My mom often falls prey to that very edict, because I'll go to the house on Fridays, and she'll be like, hey, do you know this person's in this relationship? Or, and I'm like, what? She's like, yeah, I took a quiz online, and that's what it said. I'm like, Ma, you can't believe everything you read, you know? You know? Anne Heche is not dating a pit bull terrier. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's totally true. Totally true.
Well, I appreciated your holiday-themed banter item, Scott. It inspired me to go out and buy, you know, sit-and-go certificates for all my friends.
Oh, that's great. They make great stocking stuffers.
But as I usually am, I am the Grinch on Christmas, and I have something I need
just
to tell
Christmas?
You.
Just on Christmas?
Yeah, well, I'm Grinch during Christmas, but, you know,
I think there's a couple cocktail waitresses that might back that up, that it's probably a 24/7 habit.
I was Mr. Magoo playing Ebenezer Scrooge on that occasion, so it's a different character altogether, but... You know, I need to let you know that I think we need to change the name of the show in the magazine.
Okay. Well, you know, we've been in business for a while, so, you know.
Yeah.
Might be time for some rebranding. What's the deal here?
Yeah. Well, you know, after the last tournament I played in, I'm having a change of heart. I am now completely against having anties in tournaments.
Wow.
Now, I used to love anties. I used to embrace them. I used to say, I'm going to be like Stu Unger, and I'm going to wait till the anties come around, and then I'm going to get really aggressive and steal all those chips and win all these bigger pots. And you know, despite the word ante being in our title of our show and magazine and cruises and basically our whole empire, I really think that now maybe we should change the name of the business to Blinds Up.
Blinds Up.
Because I'm so that much against anties now. And here's why. You get into a tournament, especially locally, when most of the time you're playing with people who don't play a lot. They're there for entertainment. They're there for a charity, if it's a charity event. And they don't even know what an ante is, to be honest with you, because either one, they've never survived that long in a tournament to even know they had throw antes out there, or two, they just don't know what they are.
And my favorite part of that is when those people, am I in the blind? No, it's an ante. Oh, what's that? Yeah. Everybody puts in a quarter. Oh, okay. All right, boom. And then, all right, next hand. All right, we need anties. I just paid my ante last hand. Yes, you pay it every hand. Well, that's not fair. Well, yes, it is fair because everybody's doing it. But now I have my blinds out there. But yes, the ante is on top of the blind. I quit! I'm out!
Exactly. And that is exactly how long it takes to deal another hand in this game. And I just missed another hand because exactly what you just did, and that's exactly what happens. I played in this charity tournament, and I played for 10 hours. And in hour 10, we still had a guy at the table that we had to explain that he had to throw the ante up. Now, we had been playing antes for 7 hours at that point. How do you not know? So, really, here's the thing that bothers me about it, too. Okay, yes, people don't understand it, whatever. It totally slows the game down. It slows the game down because of the explanation. It slows the game down because of the people forgetting. It slows the game down because the dealer has to grab them and pull them in. It slows the game down because people look at the pot now and they realize it's more and they have to do more calculating to try to figure out how much they need to bet. You know what I mean? Because before it was just two blinds. You instantly knew what to bet. Now it's like, oh, wait a minute. Now there's 10 of us at the table and we all paid 25. There's 250 more in the pot. By the time you add up all of that and then flesh it out over the length of a tournament, I mean, you're looking at probably another 30 or 40 hands, easy, you could play in a tournament.
And you totally forgot the every 5 minute game of Hasbro's Clue that goes on when
who didn't pay
one
an ante
is missing.
Yes.
All right, throw it aside. I paid. No, I'm pretty sure I put mine in. No, that's mine there.
Exactly.
I think it was Colonel Mustard in the library with the Billy Club. Before someone just like, all right, fine, I paid already, but I'm going to put it in. And
so,
it's always that guy that didn't pay it anyhow.
What I'm failing to understand, and I'm sure there are a million people now, of course we only have a few thousand fans, but a million people are chomping at the bit right now. They're coming in from all over the world to tell me why we need to have antes in the tournament. But I'm pretty sure that there are some bright people in this industry that can come up with a way that we don't have to have them. And it's just don't have them. You know, if you want more money in the pot, you want these tournaments to get over quicker, okay, well then just raise the blinds more. Raise them either quicker or just raise them more. If you're paying 250 per round, and instead of making it 1-2 with a 25 ante, just make it 150-300 at that level. And then it's what, 150 more you're paying or whatever? Okay, so that's roughly what you're paying. You know what I mean? There's just no reason for the antes. And I love the antes when it's a smooth run game and everybody knows what they're doing, and then you can become aggressive and steal them and whatever, and you're stacking grow exponentially with them, and I don't mind that, but it's the same thing if you're just paying more blinds. You know, you're paying it one time around. Just like when we have a stud game, we have a certain amount of players where it really doesn't make sense to everybody to ante. It'd be just a lot easier to have the dealer put up $2 or two Skittles instead of a quarter of a Skittle. You know, so to me, I'm just tired of the antes, and I know how terrible this is, knowing that our magazine and show is ante up.
Well, but you're not advocating getting rid of ante.
No.
Stud cash games, right?
So. Yeah, no. It's just, to me, when there's an ante,
it won't go extinct.
Yeah, it won't go extinct. There'll still be antes in cash games with stud or whatever. But really, in tournaments, especially in tournaments where you got a lot of newcomers and newbies who are just not used to doing that every single hand and don't know what it means and can't grasp it. And then, like you said, the dealer's got to look for whose ante this is because they're... No, God forbid you put your ante right in front of you. No, you got to throw it so that it kind of goes between you and the guy next to you, and then he looks out and sees it there.
Yeah, and there's always an ass nickel at your table that collects all the antes on the side of the table and puts one chip there.
Yeah.
And then the dealer is swiping from one side, and all right, we need antes, and then everybody's like, I already paid. No, I did change for you. Oh, great, thanks, Mr. Assistant Dealer.
Yeah,
once you write your name down on the down card there, you're going to get... put it out there. The dealer has a job.
Exactly. And then that's the other thing, too, is how many times you have to make change. You know, you make change a lot for the when the blinds are coming around, you have no choice. But now with the antes, you're doubling that. You're more than doubling, because every single hand, everyone's going to need someone to have change, because there's not enough quarter chips on the, or 100 chips or whatever on the board. And that just drives me crazy. It just drives me crazy. And I really, you know, I used to love antes. I used to be like, oh, I can't wait for the antes because I'm going to start stealing from these suckers. And, well, not anymore. Now it's like they don't even understand that you were tight up until this point, and now you're aggressive. And I mean, they just don't get it anyway. So I don't even reap the benefit of banties anymore anyways. Just get rid of them.
You know, the other problem, too, is that I'm not... I didn't really plan on getting on this bandwagon with you, but since we're ranting... You know, the other thing that drives me crazy about the antis is it keeps those small denomination ships in the game way too long.
Yeah.
You know, it's particularly a tournament that you have a quarter, a 50, then a 75 ante at some point.
Yeah.
Then you got... you're right, there's either two options. Either one, there's not enough of those ships on the table, so they're constantly going to the well and changing them out, or, you know, flipping a chip to one guy, hey, any change there, and it's always the guy that's on his iPhone and not paying attention anyhow, so it takes forever, right? Or the flip side is, there's every 25-unit ship ever invented in the world on the table, and players insist on paying their blinds, everything, paying everything with quarters.
Yeah.
So you have these big Taj Mahal mountains going under the blinds every day, and it just takes forever to... And then people are like, oh, well, if he's going to put all of his $300 big blind in quarter units, I'm going to call with all quarter units. And then you get this big, you know, 4-8 limit hold'em pot there in the middle in a tournament that takes an hour to push. So, yeah. You know what? I think I'm on the bandwagon there.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is when you get down to the... People have shorter stacks, and all they have are higher denomination ships, and they can't make an ante, and they can't make their blinds properly, so they put the big-ass 5,000 ship out.
The ante and yeah. 1,000 for the blind.
Yeah. Exactly, and the dealer's looking at you like, why are you doing that? Well, because I have to pay my ante now, and I have to pay my blind later, and he's like, no, just put one big chip out. And then, I mean, you're having these conversations. By the time they get all that stuff cleared up, you could have had 15 more hands, and it just drives me crazy. So, really, I'm going to push for no antes in tournaments. And I'm going to write a column about it eventually when I get around to it and put it
so
in the magazine.
You're probably not a fan of the ante-only tournaments, then.
Yeah, that's a little different. I was thinking of that, too. I'm like, don't have to eliminate ante-only because that's the only thing going on. They're prepared for it. But, but yeah, when you add the antes in later, you just totally throw everybody off. And no tournaments are really prepared for it as far as properly being chipped at the table for them. And yeah. I'm just tired of them.
Sometimes they are. But I'll play devil's advocate here for you.
All right.
Now we are legislating the poker based off the lowest common denominator, aren't we? There's a reason we have antes. It's because it helps spread out the structure a little bit. It does add a little bit more strategy to it, right? And essentially what we've decided here today is that there's too many idiots out there. They can't handle it, so those of us that can handle it have to suffer because of it.
No.
That's a problem, isn't it?
No, you're wrong. No. No.
I'm wrong.
No, that's you're wrong. Because it's not just the ass jacks who don't know what they're doing. It's also the time it takes to collect them. Even if they're everybody paid him properly, he still has to stall and collect a blind from everybody. He still has to make change for people that's out of their control. They just don't have the right change. Most of the time, their chips aren't properly funded at the table that you have to everybody will have enough greens or enough blacks whenever it gets to that level. So it's not just, especially like when it gets to 75 and everybody pays with a black, now he's got to find a quarter for everyone and refund a quarter to everyone. You know what I mean? It takes time. It's not just the people that you have to argue with to put them up. It's not just the fact that they don't know what it is and you have that discussion with them. It's also the time it takes to collect them, to change them, to color them up, the fact that it stays around longer if you have that kind of 25, 50, then 75 ante. It's not just the people. It's the whole thing. It just drives me crazy. It really is.
Hmm. All right. Well, you might have made me a believer there. But
I think we need to get rid of them. And I think we can address that in the column as well, just that it's not just for the people who aren't comfortable with them. It's a lot of things. And, I'm fine if you want to try to make the structure go up slowly, but really you're not. If you're in a 10-handed table, you're paying 250 more for the first time it's out. If you made the blinds, you know, instead of 1-2, now you go 125, 250, whatever, you're still doing it essentially. I mean, I just think that it's, for what you're accomplishing with it, you're wasting a lot of our time. We could be seeing more hands, and the more hands you see, the faster the tournament will go too. So I think it's one or the other. So I don't know. I think that you need to get rid of antes. They're just a waste.
Excellent. All right, well, we'll see what folks say. No hotline this week, but people call 813-448-1120, and we'll give you something great if we use it on the show. And remember, you can mailbag your questions to us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And that's exactly what Robert Hackwood did this week. Great show. Great name, isn't it?
Hackwood. Yeah, that's a good Hackwood. Name.
I wonder if he's a golfer. If not, he should be. He's really missing out on some potential there, right? All right, so this is what Robert Hackwood emailed us. He said, this happened at the 1-2 cash game at my local casino in Vancouver.
Woohoo!
A guy sat down about 5 minutes after me on a slow Monday night about 7 p.m. Ooh, he's setting the scene just like it's untraceable. As he was sitting down, the floor told him he couldn't sit down with all of his green chips, probably because he just got kicked out of that nanny tournament. He easily had $500 in greens. I'm under the gun in seat 10 with about 150 in fold. He's in seat 5 and goes all in blind. He takes it down. I believe in the editing here, the guy colored down, so I'm sorry.
Okay.
He colored down to 260, I believe, is what it was. All right. So he goes all in, right? Takes it down, right?
Yeah.
He continues to go all in blind every hand in all positions. He runs amazing, hitting the board almost every time. He built a stack up to about 1,700.
Oh, my God.
Causing several people to rebuy. He would then lose that and then win, redistributing the chips around the table. He's like the modern Robin Hood. my question is this. What hands should you go in against him? I lost with ace-eight suited heads up when he paired a five. Lost with pocket sevens when two other people called with ace rag. They split with a king 4-4-4-4-4-4-4 board. I won with 10-jack suited. One lady in middle position folded ace-king offsuit with 400 in front of her when he went in all in under the gun. She had doubled up already with aces from 200, and she said it's not like it's $100. But she was willing to risk her initial buy-in. Isn't that the same thing? I wouldn't have been able to push my chips in fast enough. Am I too loose?
Oh, I've had this happen to me, and I did reap the benefit of it. It was at Sarasota Kennel Club. Guy came in, just didn't care about money, and he could tell he just had his paycheck that week and was just, you know, whatever. And what I did was I had ace-jack, and he was on my left. And so I just limped, knowing he was going to do it. And it folded around to me. He did it blind, just like this guy was doing. And then I called, and he ended up having my queen seven, and I took all his money. And so, the rare occasions that it's happened to me, I always wait for a decent ace. I wouldn't go all in with, you know, something that I would definitely be racing with. I would rather have a hand that I'm pretty sure is going to be dominating him, like ace jack or something of that nature. But when you go in with like sevens or fives, you could very easily be racing two cards and flipping for the money. And I would rather not flip. I would rather think, you know, a hand that could be a 75% favorite or something is something I would rather go in with. Or 60-40, which is what basically happens. But 50-50 or whatever, then it's, I'm not sure I want to do coin flips. But I don't really know. I don't know what the minimum hand is to do this. In my mind, it's got to be something that I think would be at least a 75% favorite, you know, an ace and then a decent kicker, because, you know, the odds of him having a better hand than that, you know, are rare. So I think that lady with the ace-king probably should have called. But then again, she's already doubled up, and she might have been happy with that. And if she did fold ace-king, then she's clearly tight, so she wouldn't have called anything but aces, so I can see why she folded. I don't know if he was too loose. He might have been too loose. Some people will just call with anything. They think it's just a random thing, and they're there to gamble that day. But I don't like to just go and gamble when I play poker.
Yeah, and I think that's the big point for me is what I would do is I'm getting up from this table.
Mm.
And maybe you don't have that option. Maybe it's the only game going or something like that. And then I'll actually tell you what I would think if that's the case. But if I have the option of a table change or game change or whatever, I go to the poker room to play poker. If I want to go gamble, I'm going to go to the blackjack table, the slot machine, or the craps table.
Yeah.
And so if somebody else wants to gamble, and this is not just a loose player, this is just an idiot, right, with a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's not poker anymore. And, you know, I think what happens is people are like, oh, this guy's terrible because he's shoving all the time, so I'm going to get a piece of that. Well, you're not. What you are, he's forcing you to play a suboptimal part of a strategic, very skillful game, right?
Yeah.
I mean, essentially, really, what we're trying to figure out is here is what do we want to flip with this guy with?
Yep.
And even if we have aces, there's no guarantee it's going to hold up. And then you got other people in there. You're not playing poker anymore. You know every time that you look down your cards, you got to know I'm playing for my stack pre-flop with this guy.
Right.
That's not poker. I don't think that's fun. And I'm not willing to take that shot. If I'm trying to hit a lottery ticket, I'm going to go to the gas and sip and get some power balls, you know, and get some life-changing money.
No, exactly. I mean, some people may chime in here and say, well, I play poker to make money. So if I have an opportunity to make money, I'll do it. But again, it's still a coin flip. It's still
the same way.
But yeah,
you make money because you're a skillful player.
Hopefully. Yeah, exactly. And there might be an opportunity where, okay, I see I have ace-ace, and I know I'm an 80% favorite no matter what he has, unless it's ace-ace. So I'm going to, you know, I'm going to call now, and that's fine. But meanwhile, you went there to play poker, and you're sitting there round and round and round waiting for a hand to pick up instead of playing the game that normally if you had this Jack-10 suited in this position, you might have raised with it. But you know this guy's going to go all in, and you're not going to call an all in with this hand, so you might as well fold it. Now you're not playing the game anymore. And I'm with you. I'm either desperate for money that day, and I'm going to stick around just so I can try to double through the guy or go home. Or I'm going to leave the table.
If it's entertainment, I mean, if you're there to have fun that day, then it's a different story.
Yeah, though. But I'm there. I'm usually there to make money. And when I'm there to make money, I'm either going to, you know, wait a few hands, see if I could double through this guy with a good holding, or I'm just going to move to another table or play a different game or go home. Because, I mean, I don't know. It's just, if that's all this guy is going to do is keep going all in, then I know I'm going to have to flip a coin for my stack. And then even if I do, and I double my stack, what am I going to do now? I'm going to sit there and double and try to do it again. Eventually, he's going to catch me, and I'm going to lose it all. So, you know.
It's almost like the Martingale system.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's like the Martingale system. So, I mean, just go. Either go to another table or whatever. But, I mean, hopefully the guy will build up someone else's stack big enough that they'll bust him or make him so that he's so short that doesn't hurt you to play a hand with him now. But, you know, yeah, it's a weird situation. Every once in a while it comes up where I'll face somebody like that, and it's happened twice, and both times I doubled through the person. I was very fortunate that, you know, I picked up a decent hand that beat him. But, yeah, I hate that. I hate that the guy... Why is he sitting there? Why is he doing that? What is he getting out of it?
Well, that's just it. I mean, this is an attention play, you know.
Yeah.
He wasn't held enough by his mom growing up, and so now he's got a lot of money at the table. So he's like, ooh, everybody's going to be talking about me. And so that's really... I mean, here's the kind of thing that kind of that gives me the red ass about this, is I was at a casino a couple weeks ago, and we got down... seven-handed, and every old guy at the table said, oh, I'm not playing short-handed, and refused to play seven-handed. What game in the world is seven-handed short-handed? So we just sat there staring at each other, growing older, waiting for the floor to get another player over there. Where are those guys in this situation?
Yeah.
I mean, really what we need here is we need some community activists here at the table where this guy sits down. And we all stand up in unison and say, we're not playing with this joker. And then, boom, you take the power away from him. He can't put on his little show. He's got to go, you know, do something else, somewhere else. But that never happens, right? Everybody's like, ooh, somebody's going to make it snow today. And this guy gets what he wants. And I don't know. Not me.
I mean, it's funny because the two times that I think it was just two. The two times that it's happened to me where we had this kind of a person at the table, the first time the guy went broke to me, rebought, and didn't do it anymore. The second time, the guy had more money than me, I doubled through him, and that's all the money he brought. So I was fortunate that it ended after that, both times.
Yeah.
And I think the first time we were in Sarasota, and you were still in the tournament, and I was in a cash game, and then you got knocked out and we left, so I was just waiting for you to get knocked out or whatever. So when that happened, then we left. So yeah, I was fortunate. I don't know what would have happened if the guy still had thousands of thousands in front of him and I had plenty of time in front of me. I don't know what I would have done, but I imagine I probably would have stuck around just because I'm greedy that way and hope I won.
Alright, Robert, well, good luck with that, and next time it happens, we're going to give you a little diversion here. We're going to give you a download of the Chinese 13 card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store, and then when you have to get up from the table because some idiot sits down, now you can sit there and play the Chinese 13 card poker. And remember, everybody else, send your podcast questions to podcast@antiupmagazine.com.
Were you a little thrown off there, or were you thinking that because I changed the name of the magazine that the email address maybe got changed?
Yeah, exactly.
Something?
I was like, podcast.
Blinds at.
Blinds up.
Hey, we got a call to floor this week. Comes from Vic Galante. He's the guy that has a chip collection, right?
Yeah, Chip Vic.
Up in North
Vic
Florida. Yeah. He says, we're playing in a 1-2 no limit hold'em cash game in a Florida poker room, my favorite, with a final board of 7-6-5 ace tray, as Scott likes to say. My opponent bets 95 smackers. With only $25 left and a holding of 6-6, which means he has a set of sixes, I raise all in. The dealer announces, player is all in for a raise, and motions to my opponent, indicating the action is on him. My opponent flips up his cards and flings them at the board, where they come to rest showing jack-jack. The dealer now asks, you're out? When my opponent doesn't make any motion for his chips to call or to retrieve his hand and secure it in front of him, she assumes he's folding face up. She mucks his cards and starts to push me the pot. I don't make any motion and still have my cards in front of me. The opponent is confused. He says he didn't see me raise, nor did he hear the dealer announce raise. He wants to call. The floor is called over and decides that since the hand was tabled, the player has the option of folding or calling the $25 raise. He's using Rule 1, best interest of the game. I thought this was an odd ruling and actually asked the floor, why does he have the option to call if he failed to protect his hand? The floor explained that my opponent simply did not know I raised. Since he did table his hand and the dealer accidentally mucked it, the player has the option to call. He calls, I tail my hand, and was awarded the $364 pot. Afterward, I approached the floor person and asked him if he ruled that way knowing I had the guy beat. I'm a regular player there and my opponent was not. He said that he thought the thought did occur to him, but he would have ruled that way regardless.
Interesting. All right, here's what Jody says. I probably would have ruled the same way in this situation. I would have not allowed the call if you had turned your hand up thinking your opponent folded face up, or if you had thrown your cards in as a result of his actions.
Yeah, it's weird. I would not have allowed the call if you turned your hand face up. Well, the guy wouldn't have wanted to call at that point either. You know, when he sees you losing to a set of sixes. So, but interesting situation because it just seems, and it's fine. It's the right ruling, I'm assuming. But it just seems like it's still another way to angle shoot.
Mm.
You know, turn your cards face up, see his hand right away, and then they say, no, I called because you're winning, or I didn't call. Did you hear me say call? You know, I mean, it just seems like there's just another way for you to manipulate the system somehow, especially if you get a soft floor who, you know, is intimidated or whatever. He may not keep you to your whatever it is that they're supposed to keep you to. You know, I mean, it just seems like there's a chance there for someone to be an angle shooter.
Well, you know, I know this always burns the toast of a lot of our listeners here, but again, this is a player failing, isn't it?
Yep.
I mean, in this particular, at least the way it's explained by Vic, is the dealer announces the raise, right?
Yep.
Motions to the person to act. When he pseudo-acts, she then, or I don't know why I'm saying she, did say she? He or she, the dealer.
She was a dealer.
Okay, she was a dealer. She then asks for clarification on his action. You're out? And he sat there like an idiot.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And at that point, I mean, what more can the dealer do here? I mean, this is really a three-engine flameout from this guy.
The plane is going down.
I know there's times that we've been on here and said, you know, hey, it's the player's responsibility, this and that. And our listeners are like, well, why the hell am I being a dealer? I'm hard-pressed to really explain that other than just that's the way it is. Life isn't fair. That's what mom taught me. I'm sure your mom taught me that. Taught you that. Probably didn't taught
you. Yeah, I don't think my mom taught you that, but I know what you're saying.
But this is a situation now where, you know, what more are you expecting the dealer to do?
Yeah.
Boom, your hand's gone. See ya. Now, what's weird about this is obviously Vic wanted this call. And, it's an extra $25 at the $300 pot, you know. So, you know, that's the weird situation you find yourself in as a player. I think this hand should be mucked, but I'm beating him with the $25.
Yeah.
So we'll see how this plays out. But really, in this situation, I mean, is this guy, and we didn't get any reaction from Vic on what this guy, how upset he was other than just seeming surprised. I don't think he has a bone to be upset at all if he had the winning hand there and lost it.
No, he had every opportunity to hear the person say raise, to see Vic raise, and then to even, are you out? He had every opportunity to do what he needed to do there to save his hand, and he didn't do it. So, you know, so sad, but, you know, hey, that's the way it goes. You got to pay attention at the table. And he had ample opportunities to get his whatever he wanted action correct. So whatever you got to do to pay attention, you need to do it.
Absolutely. All right, Vic, we appreciate you sending in the call of floor, and remind everybody else to send your call of floor questions to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if we use on the show, we're going to send you something great. Vic just got something great, so nothing new coming to him. But everybody else, we might send you something like a deck of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Anti Up. Pick up your own decks in the Anti Up store at antiupstore.com.
All right, Lauren Finkelstein, our good friend, longtime listener, my home game homie from, from the old Northeast when I came up there to play with those guys. He said, Ann Margaret Johnson, a question that's actually been asked of us several times before, and it didn't make the show last week, so we decided to send the question to her, and she sent us an answer. So he said, if someone wins a satellite to a bigger tournament but doesn't cash in the bigger tournament, do they have to report the win as a cash win and then offset it with the loss?
All right, well, here's what she said. She said, if you win a seat and you must play the seat and cannot take the cash, you really don't count it at all. There really isn't value, so it's not a problem. If they give you the ability to take cash, technically you count that as income and then offset the buy-in.
Hmm. That stinks.
Technically all the same. It's just an extra piece of paperwork if you're able to get the cash.
That stinks.
But, you know, I mean, really, I mean, we're talking recreational players here. I mean, I'm not trying to say anybody should risk it here. I'm sure Ann Margaret Johnson, if she's on the show right now, would be smacking my hands for saying this, but I don't really see the IRS agent going back and tracking down whether the satellite seat that you got, you actually had the ability to take the cash, and you didn't. You know, that seems a little far-fetched to me. But,
yeah, because if you say I entered a tournament, here's the proof that I entered a tournament, and then I don't have any winnings to show for it. That's what I mean. So that's all you got to say, that he's not going to be able to go back. People don't keep those kind of records from satellites to, you know what I mean, they hand out the chips right there at the table half the time or whatever. So you just say, I didn't cash, because you didn't make any money from that tournament. So, weird. And then he
got... Lauren, yeah, okay.
Yeah, no, go ahead, forget it.
No, I was just kidding. Lauren, I appreciate you sending that in. That's...
It's a good question.
It is a question we got a lot, so yeah. We were happy that... and she got right back to him, too, so...
Yeah, know. She's awesome.
Yay, Ann Margaret Johnson.
All right, don't forget, Red Rock Casino Resort and Spa.
Resort
and Spore. Red Rock Casino Resort and Spa in Las Vegas will host the next Anti Up Poker Tour event on January 25th with satellites beginning January 21st. Scott, the horse champion, the reigning horse champion Long, will be there. So come on and say hi to him and take your shot at making the cover of Anti Up Magazine. Don't forget now, we can announce Anti Up room rates, $89. $89 at that resort are being offered. More details on all AUPT events can be found at antiuppokertour.com.
And, of course, don't forget, Jonathan Little will be the pro on our February 4th cruise out of Port Canaveral. We're past our rate guarantee deadline now, so book ASAP to be sure we can still get you on and get you a good rate. And I got to tell you, my phone's ringing off the hook last week.
Awesome.
I love how poker players wait to the last minute.
They always do.
Not really the last minute. We still get 2 months left, but... In the cruise world, it's the last minute, so
yeah.
Get on the phone and call. And we're also sailing out of Miami, New York City, and Tampa next year. Get all the details, including how you can win your way on board at Dover Downs, Derby Lane, Tampa Bay Downs, Daytona Beach Kennel Club, and Seneca Salamanca at antiupcruises.com. And soon to be announced, our good friends at Dover Downs, they give away cruises for all of our cruises. We love these guys up there.
They're awesome.
They're giving away five packages, Ocean View packages for our New York cruise. That's a 7-nighter to Bermuda. Gorgeous cruise. And they're doing it in a $25 buy-in tournament.
Oh, wow.
$25, you can win a $1,400 cruise package. So,
oh, man.
Definitely check out antiupcruises.com soon for the details on those giveaways.
And don't forget, speaking of Dover Downs, this week concluded its first Antiup Poker League and begins a new one on December 19th, so right around the corner next week. Tampa Bay Downs League runs through December 31st. Visit antiupmagazine.com/leagues for all the details.
And if you've ever wanted to join Team Anti Up, we need some help now. We're looking for new ambassadors in Missouri, Oklahoma, and of course still looking for folks in Canada. Apply at antiupmagazine.com/ambassadors.
Oh, and don't forget, I've got to tell you, Scott, we passed 2,300 followers yesterday on Twitter.
Very
just
nice.
Moving up the ladder, so don't forget us. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter if you're into that stuff. We really appreciate it, and we always put some pretty good stuff on there. Scott's pretty funny on Facebook, and I'm pretty newsy on Twitter, so... take us up on that.
Sounds like you're a girl with a good personality.
That's right. Okay, well, what's going on, Annie Up News Desk?
All right, New Jersey State Senator Raymond Lesniak has amended his online poker bill in that state to fortify support from brick-and-mortar casinos and says he expects both chambers will vote on it before Christmas. It's unknown what Governor Chris Christie, who previously vetoed the bill and then said he'd support it, will do this time if the bill reaches his desk.
Yeah, you know, I've seen Christie in a few interviews, and I think he's going to pass it. I think he will. I think if it gets to him, I think he'll pass it.
Well, particularly, yeah, and I didn't really look into the details too much on what they changed to really help the brick and mortar casinos out, but I would think that would probably be a selling point to them. So.
Yes, yes. The Wall Street Journal has reported that PokerStars is in advanced talks to buy the Atlantic Club Casino Hotel in Atlantic City for less than $50 million. If the purchase is approved and PokerStars receives a gaming license, it could position the online giant to be a player in U.S. online poker sooner than was expected.
Yes, definitely an interesting development.
Yes.
Because all those federal bills say, hey, if you're an existing operator, then you got the heads up.
Yeah.
And they're not an existing operator, but here's a way to be an operator by a casino.
And a relatively cheap way of doing it, too. I mean, $50 million to them. They can handle $50 million, and how often do you get to buy a casino for $50 million? You know, there's a huge, huge, brilliant play on their part if it works out.
Yeah, and we'll see what it means. And, of course, they still have to get a gaming license and all that, so it's there's still a lot of hurdles and hoops here. And,
right.
But it'd be interesting to see what a PokerStars run casino is like, right?
Sure.
I think poker's going to be pretty front and center, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
All right, and finally, at a pretrial hearing this week for seven people facing felony charges after a Florida state agency raided a free poker league in October, charges were dropped against five of them and reduced for two others. The remaining two facing now misdemeanor charges of running a gambling house are scheduled for another pretrial hearing on January 11th, when it's expected that charges against them will be dropped as well.
Yeah, just more wasting of our money.
Colossal waste of taxpayer money.
Yeah, all that for nothing.
Good thing we've rid of the world of free poker.
Yeah. Free poker's probably going to be dead now around here. Geez. Okay, well, we can complete O'Malley's move. That'll lift everyone's spirits. Let's refresh our memories.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a $1 or $2 no-limit hold'em cash game. The action has been fairly steady all night. There aren't any maniacs at our table, and while there are some new players to the game, everyone plays fairly straightforward poker. But they love to trap, and the check raise has been overused like a bad cliché. The blind's post, and it's folded all the way around to us on the button, with the jack of clubs, eight of clubs, and $275 behind. We're going to make a steal attempt here. Usually this is only sound poker in a tournament. In cash games, you'd want to play straight up. Just muck this and move on to the next hand. However, with this table's dynamic, it's pretty easy to tell what our opponents are doing. There's a good chance we can steal the blinds here, and if not, we have a good chance of knowing where we are after the flop. We might even hit something, but that's plan C. We make it $10 to go, the standard raise. The small blind folds, but the big blind calls. He's got us covered. The pot is $20, and the flop comes the ace of clubs, king of diamonds, queen of clubs. Very interesting. We flopped the second nut flush draw and an inside Broadway draw. Our opponent checks to us, and we're going to keep up our aggression. With $20 in the pot, we make a $12 bet, and he calls. The turn is the king of clubs, another interesting card. It gives us the nut flush, but it pairs the board. However, we've picked up an inside royal flush draw, and again, our opponent checks to us. What on earth is he doing? Our spidey sense is tingling, so we check behind, Even though there weren't many cards we could have seen on the turn to improve our hand this much. The pot is about $40, and the river is the 10 of hearts. Once again, our opponent checks. Okay, we've got him this time. We count out a value bet of about half the pot, $20. But this time, he raises us to $100. Was he slow playing a monster? Or is it just a jack? More importantly, what do we do?
Alright, I'm hard-pressed to believe someone will check three times with a powerful hand. Twice? Sure. But three times to potentially miss out on getting a value in a pot that is just $40? I have some serious doubts about this. Mm-hmm. But what troubles me is that O'Malley described this table as being in mad sweet love with trapping. Actually, he didn't describe it that way. That was my interpretation of it.
Yeah, that's your embellishment.
But had he not said that, I think this was a fairly easy call to make. And even with him saying it, I think it's worth the $80 risk just to find out how dangerously crazy wacky our opponent plays.
Do we really need to raise pre-flop with Jack 8 in a cash game?
Can I get an amen?
If this were a tournament, yes, probably, because you generally are going against two random hands with dead money in the pot, and you're stealing blinds, and that's good tournament structure, you know, strategy and stuff. But really, I think I'm folding this hand. I'm sorry, I know that we're supposed to react to what's going on to us now, but I would have not gotten into this situation in a cash game with Jack 8. Yes, there are occasions to play the hand. There are reasons to steal $3, you know, but really, fold the hand. You know, it's one thing to have position on people entering the pot ahead of you, and you can play the player, but why risk money to likely win a couple of bucks, or even lose a lot, which could happen here? I really think I would have folded.
Isn't it? That's generally it. What you're going to do here is you're going to win $3.
Yep.
Or maybe 13, maybe somebody's going to call, and you put a continuation bet in, and you shut them down. So really not a lot of money you're going to win.
Right.
Or you're going to get involved in this hand, where there's a lot of money involved, and hopefully we end up winning this thing. But if we lose it, really, this is what we get for being a cowboy, right?
Yep.
And what's funny about this is we got some good back and forth going on in the forum at annie@magazine.com/forum. And Chris, I know you noticed the disturbance in the force this week. Scott Long and Rant have agreed. He said the same thing you did. It's like, you know what? What are we doing? Yeah. This is Jack 8 and a cash game. It's not a tournament.
Yeah.
Again, it's very different. In a tournament, absolutely, you need to be able to play that because the blinds are going up and, you know, there's a noose around your neck. Cash game, you could sit there all day long. And again, we're talking 1-2 no limit here. I mean, really, it's just, it doesn't seem like there's much reason there. Gundam's slowly disagreeing with us a little bit on the forum, but it doesn't make any sense. No. And now we're in this tough situation, right?
Yep, and like you said, the blinds never change, so it's not like you're forced to play Jack 8. You know, it's not like, oh, I gotta get it in now while I still can be the first one entering the pot. You know, no, you're raising with Jack 8 or playing Jack 8 for no reason, really. There's no real reason to play it. So, to get back to what I was gonna say is that, you know, I probably would have folded it pre-flop, but now after all this, I'm still folding. I'm folding.
Still folding.
Yeah, I'm not gonna call that much money to win $40 in the pot originally before the bet.
Yeah, here's the thing, is I'm not calling it necessarily to win the money, and this is probably a bad thing. I am curious what this guy's doing. None of this thing adds up. Just doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's a $40 pot. Wouldn't you want to get some value out of it?
I mean,
I guess now
you're
trying to now, but I mean, really checking the river again?
I think that I turn to the guy and beg him to show me his hand if I fold, and if he doesn't, then I just live with it. I would rather I would rather beg than put another 60 or what, $80 in there to win what's going to end up being 140? I mean,
yeah, you're probably right. This hand is just so weird. It's one of those weird hands that I'm just so confounded that I got to give this guy $80.
Hey, I'm going to come up with some brain teasers for you. And when you can't figure them out, you're just going to have to give me $80 to give you the answer. Okay?
It's fish. I know it's fish now.
It's fish now. Now you know it's fish. You didn't then. All right. Let's hear the conclusion, and we'll be right back.
Hello again. I'm going to do my best to narrow his range. Could he have Jack 10, flopped Broadway, and slow played it? I don't think he would have done that with the club-heavy board. Could it be aces? No. No re-raise preflop. Queens? Again, no re-raise. What about ace-king? None of these hands make any sense. He called preflop and checked all the way down to the river and then raised our bet. Was he just banking on the fact that we were going to bet the river? He couldn't have been. We checked the turn. Wouldn't he have wanted to make sure to get money in and lead out? He couldn't have been certain we would do the betting for him. I think we're good here, but I'm not confident enough to raise. We make the call. Our opponent turns over the ace of diamonds, king of spades? What? How could he have played it that way? Talk about extreme patience at the poker table. I guess that's what we get for playing Jack 8 suited. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, sometimes when nothing makes sense, don't write it off as a bluff. It could just as well be tricky or bad play. I'm still not sure what this one was. I hope to see you on the felt.
Okay, it all makes sense now.
Was it worth $80 to you?
Okay, all right. I guess I should have thought a little bit along here. But so obviously he wasn't scared after he bore the turn, and we played right into his hands. But, you know, that's why we love poker, right? Even after we go through all the possible hands and dismiss almost all of them, you just really never know what you're up against.
Man, I can't believe we called there. Can't believe we called. Like I said, I know there are occasions to play this hand and to play it the way O'Malley did, but I'm for folding preflop and getting a better hand, especially in a cash game. And I got to stick with that. And we would have been $100 to the richer because the first 20, we put $100.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, crazy.
But you know, we don't normally talk about our opponent's play in the O'Malley's move, but I really kind of like how our opponent played, and not only because he just schooled me out of a rack, but you know, I don't like re-raising with ace king. I know other people do. You know, it's only we're heads up at this point, right?
Right.
And then we flop two pair. You know, sure, you know, there's clubs and straights and things like that, but I'll take a shot. A guy bets $12. All right, and then the turn is where we got screwed on this hand, I think.
Yeah.
Because at that point, he didn't have to worry about it anymore,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, the river is a real interesting check because at that point, he says, I hope that this guy has a jack and I can get away with checking one more time because he's going to have Broadway. And it's a real patient, quality check there if you really know your opponent. But he's really running the risk of losing money. He got lucky. He got lucky. I don't think he's that brilliant, but maybe he is.
Well, I initially thought that, you know, obviously this is a really board that hits a lot of hands, so maybe he just assumed, you know, after we bet again on the turn, right?
Right.
Or no, we checked
the turn. No, we checked the turn.
Yeah, so, at that point, everything in the world got there, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, if we didn't bet on the turn, there's absolutely no reason that he should believe that we're going to bet on the river, right? So... in fact, actually, this is a situation where I was him. I would bet the pot there, whatever it was, at that point, and try to say, like, I'm bluffing, you know, $40.
Right.
I mean, overbet, maybe even more, maybe, and just make the guy think that I'm just, you know, back crazy here and want to steal it.
The funny thing is that he doesn't have the nuts, though. I mean, a royal flush could be there. Not that it...
True.
You're not going to worry about that, but I'm just saying he doesn't have the nuts, so it is interesting that... You know, that he didn't bet that turn knowing that a flush draw... I mean, a turn, I gave him the full house, but I don't know if I guess I checked the turn, but since we checked behind, I would think he'd wake up and bet the river because it wasn't the flush that got there. It was the unlikely straight.
You know, I guess the other thing, too, is... And I fully admit it, I fell into this trap, and I feel bad about it, but I don't think you can really count on getting that re-raise called by anybody here.
Mm.
Other than me, obviously, me and O'Malley. We're the only two fish in the pond.
Which is funny, though, because if you don't think a re-raise is going to get called, then you can't check. You have to bet out.
Exactly. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
The more I think about this hand, it's very weird. I mean, all right, so he got us to bet, which is shocking, and then we raise. And, of course, he made it a pretty big raise, and I think that's probably where the lure got stuck in my mouth and O'Malley's mouth. But I really don't think you can count on that.
Why is he betting so much?
What? He's got to be bluffing.
He's got to be bluffing.
Well, good O'Malley's move. I mean, yeah. not good play with that Jack 8, but...
No, just an interesting one.
Thought-provoking, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, fresh off our successful inaugural Antia Poker Tour event at Thunder Valley Casino Resort, we're turning our attention now to an equally impressive venue for our second AUPT event, Red Rock Casino Resort and Spa in Las Vegas. The Red Rock Antia Magazine Poker Challenge will kick off January 21st, ending with the $1,100 buy-in main event that starts January 25th, with the winner of that event being featured on the March cover of Antia Magazine. Joining us today to tell us about the event is Derek Glover, Tournament Director at Red Rock. Thanks for getting up way too early to chat with us today, Derek.
Thank you. My pleasure. My pleasure doing this. Thank you for having me on. And it is a little early for me, but that's one of the benefits here in Vegas of not going to bed yet is that it's never really too early.
I love it. All right. So Red Rock has hosted the January tournament series for a couple years now. What motivated the property to team up with the Antia Poker Tour on this year's event?
Well, it's a great opportunity to work with the number one poker publication there is. So it's it's good for us. It's good for you. Hopefully, it's good for everyone. Hopefully, the customers, the guests will all enjoy it, and something that we can work with in the future.
I couldn't agree with you more. That was a fantastic answer. You know, this is traditionally a sweet spot in an otherwise crowded tournament calendar in Las Vegas, isn't it?
It is. There's a little bit of competition out there at all times. There's some tournaments always going to go on every single week. But this is one that we've had now for basically 4 years in a row. And I think other places are a little bit respecting that because we do get some fields. And, you know, when the players do travel up to our place, they don't really go too far else as well. So it's a nice little spot right there after the first of the year and before the Super Bowl and other stuff like that.
Great. Well, let's get into the actual event details right now. Tell us about the main event of the Red Rock Antia Magazine Poker Challenge, which, if I read the schedule correctly, you have four starting flights spread over 2 days, correct?
There is. There's basically a four-day one. There's going to be two on Friday, two on Saturday, And then the day two will be on Sunday, coming back at 2:00 to give all the players to make sure they had a little bit of sleep, if they played late on Saturday. So there's four flights for day one. Then day two comes back, we finish it up, on the Sunday into maybe Monday a little bit. They all go start with 15,000 in chips, 40-minute levels, and lots of play on day one. So they'll have plenty of play to go with, and we also allow them to play in multiple day one. So some players they carry chips to day two, they can still play another day one to try to get a bigger stack to day two.
Excellent. They get to choose which stack to carry on. Obviously, if they get a higher stack, they don't combine.
We basically give them the higher stack, but yeah, they technically could choose if they wanted the lower stack, I guess.
All about the customers there, Derek. Appreciate it.
You've got 13 other events on the schedule, and some of them have buy-ins as little as $40. Can you tell us about some of those lead-up events, including a heads-up event, right?
Yeah, the heads-up event should be getting a lot of buzz about that already and didn't even really put the schedule out yet.
Wow.
That's just coming from dealers who all want that day off because they want to play in that heads-up event. We put the little $40 event in there so that there's something in like the afternoons and that nobody can say that there wasn't an event that they couldn't play. We don't want to have a week-long tournament where somebody says, I couldn't afford anything. So we have those in there, and we have some bigger buy-ins, a couple of bounty events, which have gotten a lot more popular recently in the industry, and, of course, that heads-up, which players all seem to want to play that. It's a little tough to run one of those because, you're using a whole table for two players. But, we put one of those in there, and that's gonna be one of our signature events, I believe, going forward.
We've actually seen a heads-up event here in the Tampa area where they actually split the table in half and had a dealer at each end, so they actually got four people in there. I don't know. Is that a possibility for you guys? Or?
Yeah, that's. We've already. We are definitely going to do that because tables are limited for us. But still you have one that goes on for 2 hours and one that's done after 15 minutes or, you know,
yeah,
sometimes. So we're doing that. And also I put in for, on that heads up, I put in for the final to be the best of three, so that whichever players get to the final, they should have a real chance of, you know, getting a lot of play out of it and really seeing who is the best.
Excellent. Well, you're giving your players a number of ways to qualify for the main event through not only scheduled mega satellites, but also around-the-clock single-table satellites. Give us a little bit more information about how those events are going to work.
Well, actually, the single-table satellites are all to be, all get to move to the, basically the megas, the super satellites. Okay. And then the super satellites is the 20% to the main event. Players can also, what they'll do, they'll receive a voucher. And playing on any of those, any of the single tables, they'll receive a voucher worth basically an amount of money, and which is $260. So they can actually use that for buy-ins to any of the events. In the past, we've had a lot of players who have played in multiple single table satellites, and then they can take, and if, let's say they get three of those, they can combine that $780 with $320 cash and buy into the main event if they wish.
Oh, excellent.
So it, all those vouchers can be, you know, used for any of the events.
Very cool. Hey, when players aren't in the tournaments or satellites, what kind of cash game should they expect to see at Red Rock?
So we have actually real good action up at Red Rock for our cash games. We've got 20 tables in the room, and basically normally spread 2, 4, 4, 8, and 6, 12 on the limit games. Mm-hmm. There's 1, 2, and 2, 5 on the no limit, and occasionally we do get some 5-10 no limit games as well. So there's something for everyone in the cash games, and games going 24 hours a day.
Wow, great. Well, let's turn to the resort a little bit. Just like Thunder Valley, Red Rock is a AAA four diamond property, so we know the rooms are extremely luxurious there. And also want to remind our Antiup guests that they can enjoy an $89 room rate if they book through the link on antiuppokertour.com. But tell us a little bit more about the resort and what our players could do there when they're not at the poker table.
Well, the rooms, there's nobody going to be disappointed with paying $89 for a room at Red Rock. The rooms are absolutely beautiful. There's, you know, TVs in the bathrooms, and every room has a desk with it. They're all suites, so, you know, the rooms are absolutely gorgeous. Other things around the property is there's, we have a movie theater, a bowling alley, food court. There's a spa. There's actually, we just have our Lucky Bar, which just opened, which is right around where the pit is, and they just redid it, and opened up the walls to it, so now it's basically all open. You can see it from, you know, basically right in there in the middle of the casino, and it's where the main pit is. So it's it looks great, and they've just opened that up now after being, you know, redoing it for, I don't know, 6 months or so. So that's a nice little area, too, to, you know, meet somebody or, you know, make a new friend.
So, you know, there's always, you mentioned the food court, but what are some of your favorite restaurants on the property?
Well, T-Bones is the signature restaurant, and I haven't been there too often, but my favorite restaurant is the Terra Rosa Italian restaurant. It's nice, affordable meals and quality food, and something to enjoy at all times.
Excellent.
And I also always forget to remind our guests, too, that that we are in Las Vegas, and it's right during NFL playoff season, and you guys got a great sports book there as well, right?
Yeah, there's a very, very, very nice sports book. You know, huge TVs. They offer a lot of, you know, a lot of different things. The race and sports book with, they have prop bets and everything that you could want, so.
All right, well, when I was out at the Thunder Valley, all the buzz was about being featured on the cover of the magazine. Are you guys getting a similar buzz from that, from your regulars out at Red Rock?
Absolutely. All the poker players, they don't want to have their picture taken unless it's for the cover of a magazine.
We're creating monsters then. I apologize.
Well, you know, we seem pretty thorough, but is there anything else about the tournament or Red Rock that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I have nothing in particular. It's just, you know, looking forward to the event and looking forward to, you know, showcase the property in this, you know, Red Rock Antiup Poker Challenge.
Awesome.
Oh, I remember one more thing I wanted to ask you, Derek. Is there advanced registration for these events?
there is no advance registration. It'll all be done. No registration can be done until the 21st. But during that week, you can, if they come down at any time, they can register for any one of our tournaments during that week at any time.
Very good.
Excellent.
All right, well, again, visit AntiUpPokerTour.com or AntiUpMagazine.com/RedRock for more information on this event, and we'll be looking forward to seeing the entire AntiUp Nation in Las Vegas next month. Thanks again for joining us today, Derek, and I hope you can get a little bit more sleep here before you go to work, but we're looking forward to seeing you next month.
Great, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Derek.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer, better known as the Fossil Man, and you are listening to Annie Up.
All right, hand of the week comes from James this week.
Oh, yeah, there's only one James. He's like Cher,
yeah,
right?
Like Madonna. Or Gaga.
Gaga. I'm just Gaga.
And it's down your alley here. 1-3 no limit hold'em cash game.
Nice.
He has 200 Snickers in front of him.
Okay.
And he's in the. He said he sat down in the big blind, folded, and then I'm dealt king 10 suited in the small blind. All right, a middle position player raised to $10, which he says is the standard raise for this game. The button calls, and it's on us in the small blind with king 10 suited.
God.
Wow, you're thinking about this a lot longer than I thought you would.
I guess I call.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, normally I would consider folding because I got two people behind me, but you know what?
Well. Oh, yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Right, I'd have two people behind me after the flop, so normally I would consider folding it, but there's $24 in the pot, and all I got to do is call 8 or 7. Get more than 3-1 on my money. But
sounds like Chris is putting his fishing hat on here.
Yeah, I'm gonna call.
Wow.
I know. Normally I would just fold and say end a week over.
You might have to put two guns to my head before I call this.
Yeah, I think
king 10 suited in a small blind with there's a raise already.
And then a call.
What are the shots that chances that were already crushed here?
Well, dominated. Middle position, their starting hands loosen up a little bit, and then button calls are
anything. Yeah, button call, right. But then, all right, here's the thing. All right, so how confident are you going to be with almost any flush here? I mean, any flush. Flush we will be.
Yeah, any flush, I'll be very confident. You mean with, like, if I hit a king?
If it comes just a king or a 10, are you going to feel comfortable at all?
Maybe. Like I said, middle position, they could have anything. They could have eights. They could have anything in middle position. And the button could just be calling with anything because he's got position.
Well, we're going to be out of position the entire time.
I know, but I'll take it down if I get a good flop.
And then I'll tell you what's really going to happen. Well, no, I shouldn't say that because I haven't read the rest of the hand. Actually, I have, but it's not going to happen. But usually what happens when you play this hand is you end up with two of your suits on the flop, right?
Hmm.
Or you end up open-ended. And you don't get there, and you put a gajillion dollars in the spot.
You can't have that attitude. You can't.
Well, no, just... I mean, this is what's called the triple layer trap hand with a cherry on top. All right, one, you're usually probably dominated to hell with this hand.
Yeah.
If not, it's got so many possibilities that you're going to get sucked into the end, and you're almost never going to win enough the times that you win with this hand to make up for the times that you get totally obliterated.
Well, here's the deal, okay? Here's the deal. It's 1:20 into the show. I've done nothing but fold for 1:20 here. I'm tired of not playing hands, all right? I'm playing King 10 suited for $7, okay? Or whatever it is.
Okay, well, this is what's funny. We just talked to O'Malley. Oh, I would never raise a 10.
I know.
But, oh, King 10, I'm bored.
And it's actually $9, right? Because we're in the small blind. So
okay, sorry.
Maybe I'll fold now that I call 9 to win 24. So
I don't see this as very much of a different situation than O'Malley's.
All right, then I'm folding.
Cash game. The tournament, maybe. But even a tournament, I think it's... But it's a cash game, you know? The people that win in cash games are the ones that make the right decisions.
Yeah, right. The hand has hit the muck. You convinced me.
Absolutely no reason to play this.
I folded. But I'm just so bored of not playing along. I'm tired of just sitting there and doing what-ifs. I want to play and see what happens to me.
Yeah, but our hero, this is the second hand.
I know.
Sat down the big blind, he folded. I'm getting restless.
Yeah, in that situation, I'm definitely folding because I've just sat to the table. I don't even know what these guys are
no
like.
No reads, right?
Yeah, so I'm definitely folding. But if I'd been there all day with them and they're pretty tight, you know, or they're really loose, really, I might play the hand. But, all right, I'm folding. You convinced me.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, our good friend James did not, of course, or this would not be a hand of the week. So we call, and the flop comes King 7-10 with the flush draw, but not our flush draw.
See, you made me fold. I had top two.
The hand is not over yet.
Yeah, but you made me fold. Nah, I don't get that money.
All right, so we get the one in a million flop here.
Oh, man. See, I wish I had played the hand now.
All right. Well, you are playing it.
I know.
Right?
I'm like curiously playing it through James, the one named bandit here. Okay. All right. I'm shoving.
Shoving?
No, I'm just kidding. All right. So there's like $30 in the pot, give or take, right?
33 minus the rake, and we have 190 left.
I will check, hoping to check raise.
Check with the intention to check raise.
Yeah, because there are draws there. You know, Queen Jack is easily a hand that anybody could have at the situation, given with their position.
Maybe even 8-9.
As I'm saying, I was getting to it. 8-9, and then, of course, flush draws that he said. I don't know if these guys will have the flush draw, so I'm hoping that somebody who raised preflop or called preflop will bet, and then I could check raise and take it down right there, or get it all in with somebody who has a lesser hand, like, you know, a draw or something.
Okay. I'm going to bet out.
Oh, yeah?
Maybe somebody will raise me. Maybe someone with Ace King will raise me or something.
Okay.
If nothing else, then I'm putting some pressure on folks. I'm going to let them pay my price.
That's the thing, too, is we just sat down, so I don't know what these guys play like. If I knew the guy was really aggressive, I would check. If I wasn't sure, I might bet, you know, because I want to get some money in now and see if he does have ace-king, and if he doesn't, I'm not going to get any money on him unless he makes a draw, so...
You make a good point. I mean, we don't know anything. We haven't sat down. I mean, I guess maybe what I'd probably do until I get a feel of the table, I might just check with the intention of not checking raising.
Oh, really?
Hoping somebody puts a bet in, gets some money in, and then, you know what, I'll just roll the dice on this hand. I'm not going to get crazy with it. You know, if the flush or the straight gets there, then, you know what, I'm just going to treat it like I had 7 deuce and I missed. And if it doesn't get there or I improve, then great. Then I get some more money out of it. But I don't know how these players play yet. So let me ask you this.
Let's say somebody bets and you call, and then the other guy called too. So you're still three-handed.
Right.
And the turn is it's two hearts on the board. Let's just say they're hearts.
All right.
The turn's a jack of hearts.
Right.
Now, you can't put another dime in the spot.
Well, I could put another dime in. Probably not 11 cents.
That's what I mean,
but I mean, at that point, that's what I'm saying, is I'm treating this hand like 7 deuce at that point. Well, not 7 deuce, because 7 paired. 6 tray.
6 tray. So you're playing this to hope to check it down and show down at the end. Because you're going to call now, but you're not going to put any more money in the pot afterwards.
We'll see. Yeah, I mean, we'll see what the bets are. I mean, if it's $10 on the turn and $10 on the river, I'll put $20 in this pot to try to win this thing.
So why wouldn't you just put the $20 in on a check raise and take it down? Make it 30 to go.
Again, because we just sat down and we don't know how these players play. And the problem with betting out, which is what I first suggested to do, and check raising, is we're taking control of this hand with two more streets to come with a gajillion dangerous cards to come.
Yeah.
That puts us in a bad situation. So here, I mean, we're just disguising our hand. Hopefully, you know, we'll surprise somebody, win a big pot here. If it gets really gnarly and the bang goes crazy, then, you know, it's the second hand of the day. There's going to be another time where I flop 2 pair in this session, I promise you.
You think so?
Yeah, absolutely.
I go entire months without flopping 2 pair.
Wow. You need to play better.
I need to play more, I guess. But I'm serious. I played that whole tournament 12 hours, played probably, 10 hours, probably played 300-400 hands. I didn't flop 2 pair once. So you promised me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could defend any of the three reasonable options here. Betting out, checking with intention to check raise, and checking
and
check call.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, all right, so I think that I would check raise just because I don't know anybody at the table, so when that happens, you sort of revert back to ABC poker. ABC poker would dictate the person who took the lead in the hand would continuation bet, and it would get to me, and I'd be able to check raise. So that's what I'm thinking. You've used every single alley possible. You've played every scenario, so I'm not going to ask what you're going to do. Let's just go with the check raise and see what happens.
All right, our hero checks. The middle position guy who, remember, opened preflop checks, and the button leaves out for 25.
Wow. Well, now I'll do my check raise. That's what I wanted to do. So I'll check raise to like 80.
All right. Our hero puts him on a flush draw.
How?
And decides to make it 125.
How do you do that? How do you put him on a flush draw now?
Yeah, I gotta say, that's a pretty big bet for a flush draw.
And how do you do it anyway? No matter what.
I generally like to bet my flush draws because it disguises a little bit, but I'm probably not going to bet 25. I put 15 in or something.
Even that.
If that.
Even that, that could just be ace 10.
You're right. I mean, I think it's a big leap to say that he's on a flush draw.
Yeah, that could be ace 10.
But all that being said, we probably do have the best hand here, right? So I guess it doesn't matter what we put him on right now if we're going to raise, right?
Right.
Which he did. So essentially, this all played out the way you wanted it to.
So far, yeah. I'd like to make it 80 to go or so.
Okay, rather than 125.
Oh, is that what he bet? Did you say
I'm sorry. Yes, he makes. We raised to 125.
Yeah, I think that's a lot. That's way more than half my stack now, since I've already got 10 out there, so 190. So that's almost my whole stack. If I'm gonna bet 125, I might as well just shove on the guy.
Might as well shove, right?
Yeah. I was thinking like 80. 125 seems a bit much. If the guy shoves on me,
I mean, just a nice round number. 75 is not a bad rate.
Yeah, it's three times. That's three exactly times, right. Although I thought 80 was much rounder than 75.
Yeah, it probably is, but you know, I'm playing with the. I'm in a green chip game.
Yeah, you're the loser that came over with $1,700 in greens. Okay, so yeah, I'm still making it 75 or 80 though. Three times that guy's bet is probably enough to send a message. And if he calls, then on the turn, if it's a blank, I'm going in.
Okay. All right, well, our middle position player folds, and the button just calls.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know if it's a flush. That's a lot of money to call for a flush. If you're gonna call that much, you're gonna shove probably with a flush draw. What do you have left, you know? So he's probably got a hand. He's probably got something like king queen or something.
So our hero says, I still think he's on the flush draw, and a tray comes out that does not complete the flush. I'm not trying to pick on our hero here, but I think it was a stretch to think he was on a flush draw when he bet out 25.
Yeah.
But to call another 100 on a flush draw?
Yeah.
I think, I'm totally in agreement with you. I mean, this guy's got something.
Yeah.
And probably something better than ace-king, I would think, right?
I don't know. Maybe, yeah. I mean, at first it seems like it could be a king-queen hand, you know, or something like that, or king-jack, that he's on the button, so he was calling a raise. If he had better than ace-king at this point, he might have re-raised, because a hand better than ace-king is obviously a set. Or two pair, he could have. Yeah. I guess he could have king seven.
And I guess we could make our same bet. Ace king, right? Or I mean, not ace king, but king queen, or some kind of vulnerable king, right?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It was like king jack or something. But that whole the whole fact that you only have what $60 left, $50, $70, $60, something like that. That you only have that much left. You know what I mean? He knows you're not going anywhere for another $60. So if he's got a flush draw. He's not just going to call 125. He's going to want to put it all in there and see the last two cards, you know. So to me, it feels like this guy's.
Well, really, whatever something. He has, I got to think that he's planning on seeing the river, right?
Yeah, for $60.
Only 60. I mean, at this point, there's what 250 plus. It's like a $300 pot.
Yeah. He's not folding any bet.
It's 5-1 on anything at this point. So. You know, and I got to think that he's just making the decision now. I mean, actually, I guess maybe it's a smart decision on his part that there's no reason for me to put my extra 60 in right now. If I'm on a flush draw, if my flush hits there, it's going in, and if not, then I have the option of folding and keeping that 60. I mean, maybe he's got something that's maybe it's a baby flush right now. Yeah, baby flush draw.
I think we both agreed it's not a flush draw. A baby flush draw calling 100 more? I don't think so.
Yeah, I know.
You know. And if anything, then he is not even sure if he's not up being up against a bigger flush draw, and he's really screwed. So there's no way this guy has flush draw. Obviously, the three comes. We're putting our final 60 in with top two and no real other hand beating us at this point. So
yeah, and that's what he does. Goes in for his last 60. He says he now wishes I would have done that on the flop. Yeah, we probably wish you would have. The button calls. Of course, the river is a 7, and the button turns over king 7 for the full house.
Ugh.
So I told the guy nice hand while wanting to throw up and leave the poker room with a legendary 3-minute losing session under my belt.
Wow. That's.
He says, what do you guys think? Was I just destined to lose, or should I have folded a few to get a feel for the game?
Well, I think we talked about that earlier, obviously. I was desperate to play a hand waiting an hour and a half for this hand of the week, so I initially wanted to play it, but yeah, the more I thought about it, I probably would have folded. So, yeah, you probably should have folded King 10. And if anything, since you did play it, I probably would have not shoved on that flop. You know, he wanted to shove, you were saying before, so I don't think I would have shoved. I think I still would have bet it. I think once you get to the turn, once you flopped and got into the hand, I don't really think you played it wrong other than betting too much on that flop. I don't think 125 was the right bet. The other thing you did wrong was... Yeah, and then at the end, exactly. And then also putting the guy in a flush draw is wrong. This is not the right thinking. You got to start thinking about why he called there and just called. So if he just calls there, he's got to have a hand there. And it turns out you had him dead to 2 cards, you know?
Yeah.
And the
end result is it's hard to believe that the money's not getting in on this hand.
Yeah.
And, you got unlucky.
Yeah, just but unlucky. That's all it is.
The problem was, yeah, just being too itchy to get in the game. And playing with a sub. What's weird about this is it's tough. Again, I'm not trying to be results oriented, but we had the best hand. I mean, we had to have the best hand because the middle guy folded. He's not folding anything that's got any piece of that flop, right? So, right. You know, we had the best hand, but there's no expectation in my mind that we should have had the best hand.
Well, here's what I learned today. Don't listen to the Annie at PokerCast for an hour and 20 minutes before you sit down at the table. Because you're going to be itching to play a hand, and it's going to cost you your whole stack in 3 minutes.
Oh, man. All right, James, well, we appreciate you sending in your hand of the week and invite everybody else to send your hands of the week to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. If we use it on the show like we did for James, we're going to send you something great. Like James is going to get a classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. Getting and customize them with your own photo or logo. Be sure you ask about the AntiUp logo version and use code AntiUp for free shipping.
Yeah, I want to thank Derek Glover from Red Rock for being on the show today and answering our questions about the AntiUp Poker Tour coming up in January. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Lund.
We'll see you at the tables.
AntiUp is a production of AntiUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AntiUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AntiUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
All right, we good, Chris?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hi, Derek. How are you?
I'm so sorry about you.
Good. How are you?
Good. Scott's got tunnel vision over there. He forgot all about me over here. Yeah, we're recording, Scott, so you can just do the intro, and we'll get right into it.
I'm just a taskmaster, man.
Okay.
All right, here we go.